the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Marrera's Magic Supercoach podcast following round 9 of the footy. I'm Selby, your host, with us as always for Supercoach, the guru, top 10 Tommy. Tommy, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. I'm doing pretty well. I think on the weekend it was a bit of a hard week for all super coaches, but that's all right because I think it was shared pretty much across the board. So these weeks happened, the primos didn't pop, but, there's always another week and we bounce back long season.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about a few of those primos who didn't pop and also some rookies who didn't pop, which obviously meant that there were some low scores around the traps. How did you finish up for the week?
It wasn't too bad. I thought it was going to be a lot worse in terms of sort of where I finished. So 21.79, which I guess was about par. So I dropped 123 spots. So I'm now about 1.6K-ish, which all things considered isn't too bad. How'd you go?
I got 2.216, similar. And I think we're ranked very similar. I'm 1,300 now. So I think you leapfrogged me last week. I got you back this week. So we're neck and neck. Hopefully we both crack into the top 1,000 in the coming week. Similar, like I've been, my bugbear all season's been not owning Oliver, who's been going pretty big. I've now got Oliver, so that mitigated that. And then not owning Jordan Dawson, who had a substandard game. So if there was ever a week for me to make a move, it should have been this week. But yeah, just some low scores from rookies. I know a lot of them, people own them, but your McKenna's 35, Chincotta's 33 on field weren't great for me. Hopper as well, Jack Steele, we've both jumped on him at the same time and he's not looking great. So that probably why I didn't take the leap, because not only Dawson having a nice unique, like a Zachy Butters 139, who's been pretty good pickup for me after those 3 week period now. But now we get into the meaty stuff. So as you said, some average scores from premiums not popping last week. It's funny, I look back at the insights and who the value picks were, and typically I'm a value man, and more so in fantasy, you can afford to be more value because you take the value, it means you can upgrade quicker. You then do your luxury upgrades. If you get value, you ride that little cash rise, you then move them on for then the top line mids. I know that in Supercoach, that value, the line between high output scoring and value is certainly more blurry, because you want to, with these limited trades, you want to be able to have the best 22 by the end. So the people you're trading in need to be best. But looking at some value picks who would have been, I thought, good picks, Callum Mills, who unfortunately for those who got him, it was a disaster, because not just that you'll be a forced trade now again and the cash loss you also got, but he looked to be a great pick now that he moved back in the midfield. And Andy Brayshaw, also value, but didn't get the score people probably wanted. A Jack Sinclair has been a value defender for a few weeks now. Again, a substandard score. Jack Steele, mentioned him before. We got him as value 3 weeks ago. He's even cheaper now. People jumped on him as great value, and he's just going. I think there's a bit of an issue with his knee at the minute. We'll speak about in a bit. And then Rory Laird also got the sub. So amongst all those value options, teams are looking underwhelming a bit. We also saw those rookies. I mentioned Chincotta and Chan, and rookies we thought we could rely on, and we were getting a bit of luxury in trading rookies with better scoring output and job security, like an Ashcroft or a Warple or mid-pricer, and thinking we could run with these rookies. But now we're looking at our teams and we're looking pretty thin in that area. Other premiums who flopped, Noah Anderson, he had excuses at least. He had a very, very heavy tag, and watching him run through, I think he still managed an 88 or so, and I wouldn't be too concerned if I jumped early on a Noah Anderson. I think I saw a few tweets there saying how you paid top dollar and for someone unproven, but he worked really hard with that tag, and I think we're going to see him pop some top eight numbers the rest of the way. Jack McRae, I got sucked in by him early in the year. Luckily, I jumped off him, but 9% centre bounces. I thought he was going to get the big bump with no Dunkley. That hasn't happened. So, question mark, what happens with him? We'll speak about him in a little bit. And then Zachy Merritt, I know you've got him as another premium underpriced and just isn't scoring. 60% centre bounces. He actually went down without Parrish, which was a surprise. So, few things to discuss, what we're looking into, obviously the buyers to come, but final thing for the round review, I saw JD do a tweet about Supercoach philosophies, and again, I'm still learning this game myself, and a big debate last week was what rookie to downgrade to. Do you go early on a Drury, who at least looked like he was decent scoring round one and had job security? Do you go a Weddle, who was on the bubble at least but was far from convincing? Or do you pay up premium price and get someone like an Atkins? Which rookie did you downgrade to in the end last week?
I think I said in the pod last week that I was probably eyeing off Drury, and I think that was based on the fact that I wasn't really enamoured with what the options were going to be this week. So coming closer to the Friday night games, Tom Berry was probably the option. So it was kind of forecasting it was probably going to be a Tom Berry or a Drury next week. If Tom Berry popped, I was probably going to grab Drury because I thought he's probably the better player out of him and Weddle. But when Berry didn't put up a big score and didn't really find much of the footy and his role's not great across half forward, I thought, nah, I'll grab Weddle just based on the fact that even if he gets dropped the following week, I'll get one price rise out of him and then I'll grab Drury the next week. So I guess that philosophy is always, you know, not going early on rookies, but there's not really that many convincing options for this week, and I guess we'll talk about that. But I just felt that given that there was going to be no options this week and there wasn't really many strong options last week, I'll just jump on Weddle and the safety of at least one price rise. So that worked out. Unfortunately, for those that did go early on Drury, obviously didn't perform. And I guess the other one was Atkins. Like, if he was cheaper, I would have jumped on, but it would have really hampered my ability to continue to upgrade. And I guess my plans were to move on Ashcroft last week and hope Chandler had another little price rise, and then upgrading Chandler this week. Obviously, that hasn't worked out great because Hopper's out injured and Ashcroft put up a massive score. So the plan, I think, was sound, but it didn't really work out when all things played out. But that's Supercoach. And I guess I probably could have jumped on Atkins in hindsight, but at the same time, I think the plan was good. So it was a tough week for rookies. Which way did you go?
I went the Atkins route. So obviously the JD tweet and the old school philosophy is in upgrade season, you don't want to overspend on rookies because you will need that cash to get as upgrade as many as possible, as you mentioned. You also don't want to go early on a rookie because you want to get that guaranteed cash gen and have two looks at them. But you talked about the issue between the Weddle. He ended up looking good and I think he's got job security. It sounds like a few players are injured at the Hawks, Jayeth and Water confirmed out already this week. I went Atkins purely because he was on the ground for me. I needed to pick someone, or I could end up looping him, but it was very likely I would have had to field his score, and I had more confidence in him than the other two. And as it went, yeah, Weddle outscored them all and went up most in price. But again, I'm going to have to field that player this week. And again, watching Atkins, I've got more confidence, I think, in him. And we'll see how it comes out. Mind you, you then do your trade scenarios, and I'm 20K short of the ideal scenario. And hindsight, if I went Weddle over Atkins last week, I'd be able to lay that trade. But not everything goes to plan in this game. We've spoken about a bit with these buy rounds, but the more I look at it, the more I think how important they are, and especially those who are jumping across from fantasy, how much harder it is in Supercoach than it is in fantasy, because in fantasy you can use those three trades 4 weeks in a row to maneuver and switch your way through to fielding 19 each week, because that's the number one thing you should do. The benefit of the buy rounds is that you get your low scores dropped off if you have more than 18. So if you have a scenario like a Chincotta, or if you have a McKenna or Callum Mills, those scores don't ruin your weekend. They drop off. So you want to have 19 plus. You also want to make sure you finish the buy round with a better side than you start with. So it's all good and well saying I'm going to get 19 and 1 week trade Bontempelli to Oliver, then the next week trade Oliver to Tom Green. But you want to complete your side by the end of the buy rounds. It's tricky to do that with this limited trade structure, particularly the philosophy, and again, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the old school philosophy is not to make a trade in the first week of the buyers, knowing that the people you trade in are likely going to have a buyer the next week. Any other philosophies or things people should be thinking about now when they go into their trades this week, even though we're 2 weeks out?
Yeah, I think this year's a very strange year, just the way the fixtures worked out. I think when we especially look at the round 15 buy, that's where we're most coaches are stacked, and it's where you sort of look at the players we've got in our teams, those really highly owned players. The Doggies, you've got the North boys, the Giants, obviously there's Carlton, Port. Like, it's a really difficult buy to manage, and I think that's the one that most people are going to struggle with. And typically we just get kind of lucky in terms of our structures coming into the buys, where there's a nice little blend, and there's a few from, you know, everyone's kind of got the same amount from each team. But that's obviously the really difficult one to manage. So I think the philosophy probably goes out the window, and it's going to be team dependent. So when I'm looking at how I'm sort of structuring up, I'm all sweet for round 12. I've got 18 there. Obviously 13's easy. Round 14, I've got 18. And then looking at round 15 after trades this week, I'm going to have 14. So that leaves me really significantly short. So for me, in terms of my philosophy, I've got to be trading in players that might even have that round 12 by that first one. And that's the way that I'm going to be able to try and field 18 across the whole 4 weeks. So I think it's just really obviously team dependent, and you've just got to look at those buys. And, you know, if you were to go into that last buy with 14 players or 15, 16, you're giving up hundreds of points, and they're really hard to pull back. I think in the past, it's never worth blowing up your team to try and get from 17 to 18, because, you know, that 18th player might only score a 40 or a 50 or a 60, and you can pull that back by not, you know, blowing up your team and having really sound top eight, sort of top 10 players. But you definitely can't be going in with 14. You can't pull back 400 points. That'll just destroy your rank, and you can't climb it back. So I think everyone just has to look at where they're structuring up. And if there's a buy like mine in round 15 that you've got, you've just got to avoid trading in players like the plague. And you've got to really even let it dictate your rookies in the hope that they're going to go through, I think.
Yeah, and we'll obviously talk about it more week to week when we come to those buys. But I'm currently looking similar. I've got the 18 in round 12. Round 13, it'll be able to field 22. So as you said, that's a round where you might be able to trade out people who have got their buy even coming up, but to make sure it then works with that tricky one you've got. So again, I've got 22 round 14. It's round 15 for me. Currently stand, I've got 15 likely playing. Actually, that's going to be 14 because this is saying that Matt Roberts is in. 14 playing. So it's going to be a bit of trading and working out how to get up to 18, and that then dictates trades. So last week I was looking at a Sam Doherty to bring in, and there's no way I can handle another player with that buy. I plugged in a mate's team who's currently got 10 for that round 15 buy. So just make sure you do put it in. So when you're looking at trades, whether it's someone you really want or they really must have, you feel like you need them, it might actually do you worse than good to get them in now. Make sure it does fit with your buy structure. What else have we got here? Looking now into round 10 for trade targets. So again, team dependent, take those buys into account. But you mentioned the rookies. They were a bit of a bugbear last week who to trade in. This week there's a couple on the bubble. There's Blake Drury, who we sort of prepped for to come in for his bubble game. All of a sudden, his break-even's not looking like we thought it was going to be after his first game. The one thing which is looking like it should be is this job security, because from that game on the weekend, it sounds like North might have up to 5 players out. So you imagine they're going to hold. So that plays a little bit of part with him. But then the other two, Tom Berry, you mentioned, played as a half-forward, high half-forward role for the Gold Coast Suns, a pretty tricky role for scoring what appeared to be, but they're playing good footy, so he might hold his spot. And then Harry Sharp's the other one on the bubble who's looked pretty good again to date. Have you got a preference out of those three who you'll be looking to bring in?
Oh, they're so hard to split. I think Harry Sharp probably has the worst job security of the lot, but I think he's probably shown the most in terms of being the better player with scoring ability and probably role as well. So he's up on the wing. He uses the ball really well, so he's got a high disposal efficiency. And I think that's like really emphasised by the fact that he's got a really high kick-to-handball ratio. So he goes by foot a lot more than most players do in the competition, and he uses it well by foot, which keeps his scoring floor relatively low. And out on the wing, he should be able to find enough of it to keep plugging along and getting getting a decent score. The job security is probably the biggest concern, but Brisbane's injury list is really healthy. So it's really only Rich in terms of injuries to come back, and they've got a pretty stacked VFL. I think with Sharpie's probably right on the fringe there, and it's sort of going to be week-to-week dependent how he plays, because they've got a fair few that can come back into that side and push him out if he doesn't perform. So I think Sharp I'm actually leaning towards, but the job security is really worrying me. Berry, the role's not great, but what he does do is he cracks in. He tackles really hard. He's really hard around the contest. He's a pretty mature body, I guess. I think he's been on the list for 3 or 4 years. So that's obviously positive, but for a big body like that, like, he hasn't even sniffed the midfield. He hasn't even gotten close to it. So the scoring's going to be low. He's definitely a tick along, but the thing that works for him as well is if he can hold his role, and I think he will, given how, I guess, that tackle pressure that he does provide, he's a great option through the bye, because he's got the best one as that lower scorer. And then Drury, he was really poor on the weekend, but I think he's probably got decent job security, given the fact that North are absolutely ravaged and they're clearly tanking. So he'll stay in there for development, I think. And I liked him last week because he's a likely player, and he's got the, I guess, the game style that probably endears himself to Clarko. He does crack in as well, and he's a pretty solid body for a first year player.
Yeah, and you can always fall back to know that at least you saved a bit of extra cash by going Drury, and job security is very important right now, probably more so than the cash gen with these guys, because throughout the buys you want them working for you. And you're right, the one which does work the best for the buyers is the Berry option. They've all got their question marks about them though, and this isn't abnormal for this time of year when rookies come through. Obviously, rookies early in the season are those with great job security, picked early draft picks. These are now the ones, if they were that good, they would have been playing round one. So there's a few other players who aren't on the bubble who are rookies who have the low break even and potentially alternative options, but for a bit more of a premium price. If you take on that philosophy last week, which said don't pay up for rookies in upgrade season, you ignore these. But I'm always tempted, particularly around the buy rounds, to make sure you do have more scorers on field as possible. So the first one is the big, as Xavier calls him, the humper, Bailey Humphrey, who looked brilliant versus West Coast, and that's the big thing. It was versus West Coast, who were no good. I think 2 weeks before, we finished the game on a -3, and that's why his price is still pretty affordable. He came out with a massive score of, what was it, 117, I think it was in the end. What's he got here? Yeah. 117, which means he has a break-even of close to -60, I think. He's a bit more expensive, though, so he's 100,000 more than, or even more than 100,000 than a Drury type, but he's got that good buy. You know, now watching him, his job security is going to be there throughout those buy rounds, and he's got the potential upside of do a big score. He wins contested footy, he tackles hard, he kicks goals. So how do you sit now? What we learnt last week and paying up for the expensive rookies not working out, are you tempted at all about Bailey Humphrey?
Yeah, very tempted. I think, like, that scoring's not going to hold, no way. Like, that's something that everyone has to probably get out of their mind. I think we're, 3 weeks back, he's got a -3. He had a kick and a free against, and I think the kick was ineffective. So, like, I think when we sort of look at his scoring, the 50 is probably what you can expect week for week, and that's what you should realistically be paying up for, with the potential for a spike game, which is certainly possible, because he's a really likely type. And I think if they're going to expose him to the midfield more, like they did on the weekend against West Coast, which was, you know, a pretty easy game, all things considered, he will score better than the 50. And I think the 50, just looking at the projections on the Supercoach website, that has him, if he scores 52 and 52, he's going to make 82K over the next couple of weeks. And I think you can take that, to be honest. Like, if he's going to help you get through the buys, you can afford him and you can do your upgrades this week without much issue. I think he's actually not a bad play, to be honest. And I think given he's going to make 80K through there, you take him through the buys and then he can sort of be a decent on-field option that you're a bit confident about, and trade him out. Because he does have the best job security and he's certainly someone I'm looking at and strongly considering. I just need to sort of have a look at what I'm going to be forecasting to do next week. But yeah, he's strongly in my plans.
Yeah, at the moment, he's really in my plans. Unfortunately, and that's the issue I was talking about going the Humphrey, the Atkins last week, I'm 20K short. I can't get the upgrade I need, so it'd be a matter of using a boost. So the question is it worth using a boost just to get him when he's probably going to make the same amount of cash as these other rookies because he is a bit more expensive, but it's purely that job security role and knowing that he's going to be a bum on seats during the bye rounds. And we just saw last year with a few of these rookies might go big in one of these bye weeks. I think it was a Roses. We both had one of those weeks. He got an 80 or so, and that really can bump you up throughout that period. So I'm in big consideration for him. Someone who's cheap and, again, looks to going to make similar cash over the next few weeks, as we spoke about before, Josh Weddle. We weren't convinced before, but he looked really good to the eye, and Sam Mitchell's words post-game were very positive about him. I've never been big on picking up someone who's already played their three games. You get a bit of FOMO, you want to jump on late, but you kind of miss that big jump. Is that consideration for you, or you'd rather go this fresh rookie who's going to go up similar cash round one?
Yeah, I guess I've already got Weddle, so it's not something I would consider. But at the same time, I wouldn't consider it if you were looking at him this week. I think the other options are better. I think he had one touch in the first quarter and two or maybe three in the last. And then he had a really good patch through the middle of the game. He was not fortunate because obviously he got on the end of it, but he had a few really impactful moments where he got a tackle, a contested possession and an effective hand pass out. He had a really good, he obviously kicked that goal from outside 50 and he had a couple 1-2s on the wing as well. So I think when you sort of look at that game, he basically scored 65 points in two quarters. But if one of those quarters is like the first and the last quarter and he has a quiet spell, that scoring is really, I don't think, sustainable. And it's probably the upper edge of his ceiling. I think when you go back to his first two games, that's probably a little bit more realistic in sort of the 45-50 range. And I don't think that he's going to generate enough cash from there to warrant it. I think you go down to the cheaper players or you pay up for Humphrey.
Yeah, I'm with you. So as it currently stands, I'm playing around with a Harry Sharp and a Humphrey. If I had to go one, I could still land the upgrade I wanted to land. And that's why I end up going Atkins last week, because I could still land Clayton Oliver by getting Atkins over a Weddle. Whereas if it was a difference between that, I would have gone down for a Weddle, but I could still get the upgrade I wanted. So if you still get the upgrade you want and you can get Humphrey, I'd rather do that and not have to. I know it'd be nice to have that extra cash buffer in the coming weeks, but I'd pay up for that. But if it's a matter of missing out on Oliver and having to settle for an Andy Brayshaw, if you were to get a Humphrey, then I'd go the cheaper rookie and get that better premium. Because as we've seen, the value premiums didn't fire last week, and the expensive ones are expensive for a reason. And it's been very hard to pinpoint reliable, particularly in the midfield and defence, really, this year. Premiums so far, it's kind of dictated ranks so far. I think the forward line's been pretty much as all expected, plus a Zeeble, nice bump, and a Sheasel. But those big five seem to be doing pretty well. The midfield's where we're going to spend a bit of time, though, mind you, because you mentioned you've got Hopper out. I've also got him, and I imagine most of the listeners will also have Hopper to trade out. He's at a nice price point. Unfortunately, that low score didn't give him the last little boost of price, or also would have been a great player to hold through the buys. But he's a must trade now. He's out for a long term or medium term at least. The plan is to get him up to a top end premium. So what we're going to do now is reassess where we think these premiums are going to be from now to the end of the year. As you said, with Humphrey, you don't get the scores they've scored to date. That's what they're going to do from now going forward. Just a bit of a flashback look at where I ranked them at the start of the preseason. Like I'd Laird number one, who's obviously had a subdued start of the year with that calf issue and them going a bit quicker and more direct with a Rochelle and a Dawson in. I had Bontempelli number two and Oliver number three. They're both looking pretty good. Tuke Miller four, he's now injured. McRae five, he's now been, I think he can get the bump with Dunkley. He has done all that. He's kicked out of the midfield group, so he's out of there. Lachie Neal I had six, who's had a pretty subdued start to the season. Callum Mills I had seven. He's out of there now with injured. And Jack Steele, I had at eight, and he's dealing with this medial. So going off my preseason projections, they're all kind of iffy. Looking at the current averages and the top eight mids as they stand to now, we've got Bontempelli 1, Oliver 2, Petrarca 3, he's been great, Liberatore 4, and he's essentially been the big benefactor from Dunkley out. We all thought, I thought it was going to be McRae. Libba was the one, currently playing great footy. Sammy Walsh, less sample size, but looking great. Caleb Sarong being the picked up the slack with Brayshaw's slow start, but he looks like he's got the attributes to continue. And then it's a Noah Anderson to round out the current top eight. Do you have a list or at least couple where you think top eight mids will stand?
Yeah, I do. And this year is, it's so hard. I was going back and looking at the top mids from last year, the scoring, and there was a lot. There was a fair few more. I think there were three or four more players that were averaging 115 over the season. And looking at the players that we'd expect to be in that range, a lot of them have fallen off, and a lot of them come with injury concerns as well. So for me, I don't remember who I had in there at the start of the year, but I think Oliver and Bont are the clear two mids. And then I've got Petrarca, Laird. I think Laird... I'm nervous about Laird, but I think over the course of the season, he'll find himself in that range. Then I've gone Sarong, who's obviously a bit of a surprise performer in terms of what he scored this year. But what really helps him is the consistency. He hasn't gone under 100 since round one. He's shown that he's got a ceiling as well, which is really good. And he's durable. Then I've got Libba, Anderson, and Josh Kelly. So I think from your list, I've left out Neil. I was looking at Neil, obviously he hasn't performed well this year. The average isn't too bad, but when you take out that 176 that he got against North, he's averaging under 100, which is obviously a massive concern for owners. You've had that one massive score, and there isn't a reason why he's scoring so poorly. The role's good. There's no word of injury. He looks fine when he gets the footy, but there's clearly something happening in terms of the mix in there, and they've obviously increased their midfield strength pretty significantly. So for me, he's just falling out. And then Walsh, I think, he's probably going to score around the 110, 113 mark. I just don't see him having that massive ceiling playing off the half forward line that he could get it if he moved into the midfield.
Yeah. So my list of eight, very similar. Oliver Bont, Laird, I've gone. I'm with you. Whether it's just bias from last year, seeing how good he was. I know he's got those issues so far, but I think he'll hopefully get through those and then have the bye and then come home strong like we saw last year. Petrarca looks to take his game to another level. Anderson, I think, can be a top eight. As you said, I do have Lachie Neale in there purely because how good he was last year, and he's had a few excuses this year, but mind you, he hasn't copped the tag this year, and that was... the only thing which held him back last year was the tag. This year he hasn't been tagged, and as you said, he's averaging sub-100 without any injury, without any tags, outside of that big North Melbourne score. Obviously, they're playing a lot more direct. You listen to the coach speak. He says that they were a bit too Neale-reliant last year, so maybe talking myself out of it, I probably should be bumping him out of this top eight list. I've got Walsh there and then Libba as well. It's a bit disrespectful putting him so low in the top eight, considering when you look at the averages so far this year, and he's the next best outside of the big couple. So for me, the way I play this game and where I'm trying to find that good balance between value and top eight in fantasy land, it doesn't matter for them to be top eight. I'd still just get in someone who I think is going to perform close enough to those top eight, who is the best value, and get them in. So players like Mills last week, I think, in a Brayshaw for fantasy would have been a great option. Whereas now in Supercoach, I think I want to have one of these top eight. So when I'm looking for a replacement, it needs to be one of these top eight, but I still play the value card. So then I just look at, okay, well, where are they sitting on my list? And then where are they sitting on price? Obviously, Oliver and Bont are still very expensive. Mind you, Oliver's the third most expensive. He's down 40K, and I've got him being the number one coming from here. So if I'm not an Oliver owner, this could be a great chance to jump on him from a hopper. But then most of the other guys I have at the top are pretty well priced in, except for the Laird, who, yeah, I've got being the third highest averaging player on the midfielder from here, and I think he's the 12th most expensive, down 108,000. So that's where I'm leaning towards this week. Obviously, it comes with a lot of risk with that calf complaint plus recently getting subbed off. How do you play it? Do you just go shoot for the top this time of year, knowing that points are getting more and more pivotal, or do you still need to have that value idea in your head as well?
I think there's, value. Well, yeah, like it's based on projections and value. So what you're going to get for your dollar over between now and the end of the season. And I think Oliver is still a great option, given that he probably is underpriced based on what he could do. I think there was, it was Bryce Mitchell, I think, put out what's happening with the magic number this year is that all players is kind of inflated over in comparison to what they would be last year. So when you sort of look at someone like Oliver, I think there is room. You might be getting him at the lowest point, barring an injury. But then I think for me, because I've already got Oliver, it is looking at that sort of next bracket. And I don't see any other players really warranting spending over, 610, 620 on them, which sort of for me means I'm sort of looking at that Laird or Sarong type. And I think Laird, just given that he's proven it over such a long period of time, is probably just ahead of Sarong for me. But I've tried them both in my side and I like both of them. And I think they're, relatively fairly priced based on what they're going to output. But I think Laird's just got that massive ceiling that he could start producing on the back end. But obviously the injury concern is what would turn anyone off. But I think it's probably worth the risk. So that's the direction I'm leaning as well.
Yeah, well, obviously I'll give the final update of where I'm sitting come the trade-in sites, but that I'm sitting on a Laird at the moment, which is a good D. We just saw what happened with the Callum Mills, who hasn't looked right all season, and then those who jumped on him got stung. Sometimes this game, the best players and the ones who are going up for a reason, and buying low doesn't always work out. Getting a supplier who's just been subbed off, fresh off a sub, fresh off not training the week before, is a risk, but that's where I'm currently leaning, Rory Laird. But yeah, as I said, if I had no Oliver, he'd be the number one ideal move. If you haven't got Hopper and you've still got the opportunity to make an upgrade elsewhere, defenders, they're getting tricky to pick outside of Dawson. Who are your current top targets in the back line this week?
If you don't have Tom Stewart, I think he's worth paying up for. For sure, just based on that bye. He's got the golden bye. He's going to play through the three difficult rounds, and obviously the scoring comes along with it too. So he's probably fairly priced. You're not getting a whole lot of value at 600, maybe a little bit, but I think he's definitely the number one option if he's not in your side. I think after that, you're probably looking at a Sicily. I think he's probably the next best. And yeah, he doesn't have the horrible buy. I still really do like Doherty at that price when you're sort of hunting value, given that he's 100K cheaper than Stewart basically, but he's got the horrible buy. And then obviously Dawson's a really good target, but the fact that he's going to come down pretty significantly in price if he puts up another 100 means that you just got to wait to get him, I think.
Yeah, so I'm with you on those three. Tom Stewart buy is going to work a treat. I'd have Doherty over Sicily just because Sicily's been so up and down this year, but the buy rules out for me, and I imagine it ruled him out from a lot of coaches, but Sicily's back looking fine. He's discounted. The Dawson one, something I used to do in fantasy, and it's whether it's stubbornness or patience, but if I haven't owned a popular player who's been really good up until this time of the year, and whether you don't own an English or if you don't own a Errol Goulden or whoever it ends up being who you might have missed so far, my view has always been to wait to after their bye to get them in, because your one reprieve and saving grace is having that week. Like I've been looking, staring down the barrel of Dawson's 170s and 150s the last 4 weeks. This is the one week you can finally sit back and relax, knowing those Dawson owners aren't going to put a big score on your head. They're going to have to bench him. So that's your chance to get a little comeback, and then you get them after that week. So for me, you're right, Dawson. He's got an okay buy. He's come down a little bit in price from last week, but one, he's going to be cheaper post his buy. Hopefully he has shown he can put up 160, so he could easily beat that break even. But a bit of gameplay there. I like to avoid those popular players who I've missed early in the season to after their buy and at least get that 1 week of feed up and relaxing. So I'll be targeting him post buy. Midfields we've spoken about. Forward line's a tricky one because what the news came out, Jack McRae I think he's currently in line for forward status, and the way Dogs are going, I think they'd be mad to change their current mix of having Bailey Smith having more time in there, which will mean McRae coming off a half forward flank, him being DPP, which seems very attractive. A player who's been a perennial 120 averaging super coach available in the forward line for a cheap price. I know he's not putting up big scores just yet, but you'd have a bit more confidence having him on your field in the forward line than a Rosie and a few of these other types of Sheezer if you're still going there. Walsh, still word that he's on track for DPP. Max Gorn as well. So is it now, knowing that DPP is coming very soon, you probably hold off doing a forward upgrade? It's more focusing in the midfield and defence?
Yeah, I certainly would. I think I've got one spot there and I'm saving it. If my round 15 buy wasn't horrible, I would be jumping on Walsh this week, knowing that he's going to be there come the DPP changes in round 12. So, yeah, I think you definitely want to leave a spot open, because I think when you look at it, whether it's McRae, Walsh, even potentially a Gorn, one of those are going to be in that top six pretty comfortably, and I think you want to save a spot there. I think a lot of coaches are pretty fortunate as well, forward lines where we've got some decent rookies that we can loop on our field. So it's definitely not the place that we've got the worst on-field rookie score, I think, pretty consistently across the board. So, yeah, I'd be leaving a spot open, but I wouldn't be going early on any of them except for Walsh. But even then, it comes with a fair bit of risk. One injury to that midfield, maybe not Carlton, actually. They're pretty stacked with midfielders, but for someone like McRae, I think he's on 35, and that's obviously the cutoff. If Libba goes down, heaven forbid, Bont goes down, that could push McRae into there. And with the average of 35, it would only take even like two quarters of playing pretty significant midfield minutes, and that DPP's gone.
Yeah, spot on. I'm with you. And it's funny, this year, I think the people will be, if McRae gets it, then he's not going to be that attractive anyway. But what we saw this time last year, like a Luke Parker got DPP, Bontempelli, Tim English, and then you see the role change happen. So I think the hope is that McRae gets it. We can hopefully jump on someone like him as a unique to finish the year, and then he gets that role change. But as it currently stands, I'd very doubt that's going to happen, because they're looking good without him in the mix. And it's also looking less of an urgency to save that spot, given, as you said, the midfielders last year, we had so many midfielders going over 115. Now it looks like there's those clear two, being a Bontempelli and a Oliver, and then the rest is a bit of a raffle between them. So at the moment, it's actually okay, and I've got Cornelio sitting in my midfield at the moment, taking a midfield spot, because it's not like you're giving up a potential 115-plus spot, because there hasn't been many putting their hands up. Quickly touch on ruck for potential upgrades. I know most coaches are now setting and forgetting, or at least dealing with their current ruck spot. Darcy put up an okay one on the weekend. The one who has a little bit of appeal is a Max Gorn. Again, tapping into that potential DPP. I dare say he's going to get forward status when that comes. He's down $103,000 for the season, partly due to that low score with the injury, but also partly due because he's now rucking for the season average CBA 41%, on the weekend just gone 42%. So it looks like they're trying to conserve him. He's more dangerous forward than a Grundy. He's a bit older. Who knows what's going to happen finals time, but they don't care about these little easy wins. So you're not going to see the 110 averaging ruckman we've seen in the past. But with his buy, and we've talked about round 15 buy, being so tricky, is there a world, if you've got buys up there, trades up your sleeve, you could do an English to Gorn now and make the cash that way, knowing that Gorn's got Tickle this week? We just saw what Goldie did on Tickle last week. You can then move Gorn forward in the coming weeks. You avoid that English bad buy, plus his cash he's going to lose with that low score from last week, and then look to get English back again? Or is that just flirting with danger?
I think it's flirting with danger. I think, like, English up until 3 weeks ago was the number one player in the whole competition. He put up a 90 against Reeves, who is obviously a pretty dominant tap ruckman, 124 against Flynn. And then Pitney, I think a lot of people underestimated, including me, how good Pitney is in those hitouts. And when English can't dominate those, and if he's slightly off his game around the ground, he's probably going to have a lower score. But I don't think the point difference is enough to justify it. The only way I would I think it's a cunning move, but you would want to have a lot of trades because I think you'd be bringing in Gorn probably with the plan that he would go forward, and then now you're bringing in another ruck. Is that going to be Darcy or is that going to be Tim English? I think that's probably the way you would look at it. So and then you've got Gorn coming off that knee injury, not knowing what's going to happen week to week with how many ruck minutes he gets. If they're pretty comfortable, they're going to rest him forward for a lot more time. I think it's just there's too much risk there for me. I think it's a valuable play if you're pretty flush with trades, but I don't think many would be given the injuries we've had this year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And we've just seen even this year those who have mucked around with mid-price options in the ruck department, what happened last year with the Proust and what was happening there, that as soon as you set and forget that ruck line, that makes the fancy game or super coach game much easier. So it's not something I'd do. It might be one if you've got an uncle's team running, you want to throw out something a bit different just to see, have a throw at the stumps. But I'm certainly not going to pull my team apart for that. I think there's better ways to make cash, particularly with these cashed out rookies and then a few options we've got already this week. All right, as you know, we record this on we record Tuesday night. It's up on Wednesday morning typically. So we're not sure on teams yet, know if he's going to be announced, but looking at popular trade ins, and the name we haven't spoken about is Darcy Cameron, who came in the season as an underpriced premium. What he showed at the start of the year looked as if he's going to be, whether it's a top two ruck or a top six forward, either of those is going to be within reach of his. He's still underpriced. He could be returning. Obviously, a lot of coaches are keen on him already. It's something I probably wouldn't do just up, but were you any interested in first up, knowing that he's still cheap, 494K?
In different circumstances, I probably would be. But I think when you look at Cox, really probably having a top five career game on the weekend, there's a few outs for Collingwood in terms of tall stocks. Cameron's obviously coming off injuries. I just don't see a world where he's a number one ruckman, which is what he needs to score enough to be a great option, I think. I certainly wouldn't be going there. And I think, with Pitney this week, he's obviously a pretty dominant tap ruckman. I think the better matchup for Collingwood would be go Cox in there and try and quell some of that influence. So for me, that probably leaves Darcy Cameron spending a fair bit of time forward and rucking around the ground, which probably isn't going to be enough. And there's a fair bit of risk if he does get named that of injury reoccurrence. So certainly not for me.
Yeah, I think he's going to become an option soon. When we start, that role settles. I think we saw in the preseason, that's why a lot of coaches called on him, because they opted to ruck Cox a lot more over him. And we all thought, okay, well, and I think Cameron had that hamstring in the preseason. So we thought, okay, well, it's going to be a 50-50 split as it was last year. We thought we might have seen a bit more of a Cameron. Come round one, it swung on its head, and those who did back in Cameron were rewarded. He did get the majority of the ruck minutes, but as you said, I wouldn't be surprised now, him coming back from injury, showing how good Cox was last week, that we're going to go back to that, what we saw in the preseason, which wasn't enough for me to be convinced. So for me, it's a no, and I think there's enough other alternatives out there to jump on than him. A few mid-priced options, and as I said, more often than not in this game, and looking at my trades, which worked well last year, I'm trading in players who I think can be in the top end of their line, or at least close enough to that. But there's a few cheap mid-price targets, and the benefit of cheap mid-price targets is you get a little bit of cash gen. They can act as a stepping stone. If they can score close enough to those top-end guys, it can be fruitful, but knowing full well you're going to have to use another trade on them soon. There's a few who have put their hand up, cheap options. Let's start with Matt Kennedy, who was subbed a couple of weeks in a row. He then had a full game last week and scored well, looked good, good CBAs, good role. Temptation going to him, knowing he's still got a high-ish break-even with a lower score the week before?
There's temptation. I just think, like, he's done it before in terms of what he would need to put up to make him a decent pick. I don't see a world where he's going to be a great, great pick. Like, he's not Darcy Cameron or Himmelberg from last year that were similarly priced that could put up keeper numbers. So that's not what you'd be getting in to Kennedy for. And I think he's got the horrible bye, which means he's probably not going to be in your side. Like, he's certainly a flip. You want to be coming out of the buys with a full Primo side. If not that week, the week after, which means he doesn't have a whole lot of time to make cash. So I think Bryce Mitchell put out on Twitter, I'm just having a look at it now, if he averages 90 over the next 4 weeks, he's probably only going to go up around that 60-70 mark. So a really good on-field option. The buy's horrible, which probably for me rules him out. If you were pretty good on that buy, I think if he had a different buy, I reckon I'd probably be jumping on, to be honest, but I think that rules him out completely. And the fact that he's been sub also gives me enough concern that he's probably not worth the risk.
Yeah, I'm with you. Sometimes those plays, those mid-price guys throughout the buys work really well because they can fit in your best 18, they can knock off a bad rookie score, and if they can put up a 90 or so, although he's not going to make the cash we typically want from those mid prices early in the year, the 150 to make it worthwhile for the trade, the points over those buy rounds help you jump a heap amount in ranks, but that buy, I doubt he's going to fit with your buy. So if, say if he was a Gold Coast player, then he might come into consideration knowing someone who could go 90s throughout the buys, play for three, but he put a line through that for me. Dustin Martin, another one, put back-to-back good scores and looked great to the eye too. Bit of Dusty to the old. Mind you, it's not the Dusty midfield Dusty. It's a Dusty small forward Dusty, which relies on a lot of things to go well. Down 18K, which is not like you're getting him at a massive discount. Any interest for you?
Nah, not for that. That's a keeper price. I think we just spoke about wanting to save a spot for one of those players that are going to get DPP. And he obviously comes up against the Bombers this week, so he'll probably put 150 on our heads. But then I think after that, he's probably going to fall back to the pack. So, yeah, not for me.
Or another mid-pricer, Ollie Wines, obviously being pushed out of the main man with Rosie Horn-Francis and Butters' development. But it's crazy how much or how bad he's gone so far this year. His season average is 75. He's down 160K on a price we thought was potentially unders from the start of last year, knowing that he had that heart game and played half a game of footy during a game last year, which brought down his score. I think he still finished with 105 average last year, 113 average the year before when he won the Brownlow, 104 average the year before that. Again, noting that he didn't have Horn-Francis, Rosie and Butters to compete with then, but he's been a very reliable Supercoach player throughout the years. He's cheap. If we're talking about these names, I like him more than the other ones, but again, where do you sit on this in terms of temptation to hope to save a little bit of money, or do we just, knowing that trades are pretty valuable at the moment, get someone you're happy to hold the rest of the year?
Yeah, he's someone that I've been keeping an eye on because, you know, he's on, like, he's down, what, 160K. He's certainly capable of not really putting up top eight numbers, but close enough to in around the 105 to 110 mark when he's on. I think the biggest concern is obviously, like, the decrease in scoring has come from those low CBA. So he's down around almost 50%, probably high 50s. And in the past 2 years, he was, you know, 78, 80, 85 from week to week. And obviously with those players you mentioned, either coming into their own or coming into the side in JHF's case, I think it just means that he's probably, you know, an 85 guy at best. And he's probably not priced well enough. It's a big risk, and it's not like he's coming off an absolute blinder that makes you wanting to jump on. Like, he got a 93, and I think that's his highest score for the year, potentially.
Yeah, it was. And he also had his highest centre bounce, which is a good thing, knowing that maybe he can get back up to 70%. Unfortunately for Rosie owners, it came off Rosie's typical usage. But on the flip side, it's like, okay, he had every chance this week. They played North Melbourne, he had 70%, and he still just tippled over the 90 mark. And once again, he has that bad buy. So I think if it was Matt Kennedy v. Ollie Wines, I'd take the Brownlow medalist Ollie Wines to be that nice player throughout the buys. I've done it a few times in the past with players like a Wingard for the buy with the Port Adelaide, and Jack Nunes maybe been there 1 year back in the day, which worked really well, these mid prices throughout the buys to get the extra bums on seats. But knowing that he's got that bad buy, it's, he just got a line through me. And another one, Whitfield, no coming. He's looked a little bit more like Whitfield of old, but he's also got that buy. So these mid prices, I think if they play with your structure and give you extra numbers throughout the bye, play around with the planner, then I'd tick off getting someone knowing they're not a keeper. As you said, this time last year it was a Darcy Cameron and a Himmelberg who end up being great picks. I think these guys don't have that potential, and I doubt they're going to work with the buyer. So for me, it's a no. Final one, I know a few people complaining about their underpriced premiums. Let's just say McRae is one of them. Do you have a philosophy you might as well now wait until their buyers to offload? Because I dare say if people, well, we had Chincotta, I had McKenna, people had Chandler, there's still low rookies on score, on field. You'd be silly to get rid of an underperforming premium now at the expense of upgrading a rookie.
Yeah, for sure. And he's potentially going to get forward status, which I think is a benefit. Like, the problem is he hasn't been horrible. Like, when he gets the footy, he still does Jack McRae things. He's awesome on both sides of his body. He's really clean below his knees, and he always gets a clean possession away, even in congestion. I think, you know, he should be in there, and I wouldn't be surprised if they move him on because he's way too good to be out on a wing. Like, they could get someone in for him, but he should be in the midfield, and I think they're one injury away. Libba's got a pretty horrid injury history. I think if Libba was to go down, he'd go in. So one, because of the DPP, two, because you want to be upgrading and getting your worst rookie off field, and he's giving you pretty serviceable scores, really. You just hold him because he's not going to really go down much more.
Yeah, he's still when he touches the ball, goes to goal, which just hurts you more because you know, well, if he had the right role, he could be that 120 mid we're hunting for. The other Bulldogs mids are doing that, being a Libra and a Bond, but he's genuinely been bevoed. Like, we've seen him without Bailey Smith in the team, he didn't get more midfield time. We saw him without Treloar in the team, he got less midfield time. He's a vice captain. As I said, he's a footy nut. You listen to him talk, he's just a footy nerd. He'd be hating centre and a half forward as a vice captain, but a mate of mine, Holmesy, reminded me, well, their last vice captain was Mitch Wallace, and he just played twos all year. Like, Bevo doesn't care what your stature is or what you've done. He just has his little crafty plan in his head, and unfortunately at the moment, that doesn't include McRae in the midfield. But as you said, all it needs is one little opening up, and he could really come home in the end, particularly if a lot of teams like myself already have the six forwards and don't have the trades to then get him. He could prove a nice point of difference. So all that said, Tommy, how are you currently looking with your trade plans this week?
Yep. It's going to be either Sharp or Humphreys in for Chandler. Really not sure which way I'll go. I'm going to have to really forecast what I'm probably going to be doing in the next couple of weeks to decide which way I go. And I think, you know, I'd be happy with both in my side. I'd definitely be fielding Humphrey, but I'd probably be looking to loop Sharp if I can. And then the primo I'll be bringing in will be probably Laird, but I'll wait for more clarity around, the hit to the ribs and see how he trains throughout the week. I think if he's managed and really just jogging laps, I'll probably go in a different direction. I'll bring in Caleb Sarong, but it's a really hard week, and it's been a really hard couple of weeks for trades in Supercoach, and I think that's why I went Oliver last week, just because it was easy and he's great to have in your side. But yeah, I think that's the direction I'll go, but wait for teams. No doubt we'll probably get some carnage on Thursday.
Yeah, tell you what, it felt much better having Oliver in my team, and he underperformed his price, underperformed his average, 198, but we still just, you know, just Oliver, you take it, you're happy. Yeah. I think you looked at his turnovers, he had a very low disposal efficiency, high turnovers, and he's still got that 119. So it just shows what he could do if all clicks for him. My trades are, I've still got McKenna. I'm not sure if you have McKenna, but we all thought with Rich out, he's going to get his go. We spoke about this time last week. The only time he looks like getting the ball is when it's a kick-in opportunity. He doesn't really run or call for it outside of that. So for me, he's going to have to move on, along with Hopper, who's out. Unfortunately, that then means that's two players I've been fielding. I'm going to have to bring in a rookie who's going to have to be fielded, and that's why I'm going a Bailey Humphrey. Laird I'm eyeing off, and then to get that money to get a Humphrey and a Laird, I'm going to have to just do another little rookie downgrade, which might be an Oscar Baker or a Liam Jones. I've got a few tapped out rookies on the bench. For a Sharp, as it stands, who I agree at least looks the best of the lot. But as always, I'll update on my current or my updated plans when it comes to the insights on Friday morning. But thanks again, everyone, for their support. Thanks, Tommy, for jumping on again, and hope everyone has a good week. Cheers, Tommy.
Cheers, mate. Magic.